afternoon. It's very good to have the chance to speak to all of you again. My last press conference was after the National Day rally. I spoke about some of the key policy initiatives and shifts that I had announced. Since then, the tempo of my international engagements and visits have increased. I attended the ASEAN summits in Laos, Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Samoa. I've been embarking on my series of introductory visits to ASEAN capitals. I've visited Brunei and Malaysia earlier, more recently Laos and Indonesia, and I hope to cover Thailand later this year and then the other capitals next year. Later this month, I'll be traveling to Peru for APEC and Brazil for the G20 summit, and then I will end the year with a visit to Malaysia for our annual leaders' retreat. So it's a full schedule of travel. Someone, in fact, recently asked me, why am I traveling so much? But these are all essential work trips. Foreign policy and international diplomacy are a key part of my duties as Prime Minister. And what I do here is also crucial in advancing Singapore's core interest, especially at a time when the world is in flux. In fact, it's going to be a far, far more dangerous world. We already are experiencing two hot wars in Europe and the Middle East. The US-China relationship is in a more challenging place. And there are lots of moving pieces geopolitically where things can easily go wrong. It reflects the state of the world, one where established norms are fading and where multilateral institutions are weakening. And that's why we see growing zones of impunity where state and non-state actors are able to push for what they want with little or no consequences. All in all, it means a less hospitable environment, especially for small countries like Singapore. And that's why we have to work even harder to strengthen our network of friends and partners and to work with like-minded countries to shape international norms and rules and to find common ground on issues of shared concern. These are not necessarily top-of-mind issues for Singaporeans, but foreign policy is critical to our ability to survive and to thrive. It's about how we can stay relevant and expand our networks and ensure that our little red dot can keep shining even in a more dangerous and turbulent world. In the end, everything we do, whether it is domestic or foreign, comes back to how we can make life better for Singaporeans. And that remains the focus for me and my team. I know that cost of living remains a key concern for many. We have had measures announced in this year's budget that are still being rolled out and hopefully will provide some relief. But meanwhile, we have also started preparations for Budget 2025. The pre-budget consultations will start in December, and we are focusing on several broad themes. One, our economic strategies for the next bound, because a strong economy remains critical in improving living standards for all Singaporeans. Two, about opportunities, skills upgrading, and jobs for workers, which remains a concern. Not just jobs, but better incomes for everyone. And then thirdly, how we can provide support for Singaporeans across different life stages as they enter the workforce, as they start up families, and then for those who are older, especially for those who feel sandwiched between looking after elderly parents and their children. And finally, what we can do to strengthen our sense of solidarity and unity, especially as we mark SG60 next year. So these are some of the broad preliminary ideas or themes we have identified for the budget, but we welcome your feedback, suggestions, and views, and we will do this through our usual pre-budget consultations. I'm committed to engage and to listen, to review, change, and reset policies where needed, so that together we can take Singapore forward toward a fairer, brighter, and more inclusive future. Happy to take your questions.
Everyone, can you please raise your hand when you want to ask a question? And when we call on you, please do introduce yourselves too. Okay, we have the first from Straits Times, please.
Hello, PM. Thank you for the overview. You spoke about how we are now in a more dangerous world. And indeed, we are seeing a more contested world where, you know, Singaporeans are also put in different directions, whether it's about the US-China rivalry or the Gaza war. So what's the impact of such issues in affecting our social cohesion and our domestic politics, including at the ballot box? And how does that in turn affect our Singapore's foreign policy positions and options?
Well, up to now, where foreign policy is concerned, we have for the most part been able to rise above domestic politics, which means that we focus on what it means to serve the larger national interest in thinking about foreign policy. And I would like to hope that we can continue to keep it that way. It doesn't mean that there will be, there will still be some, from time to time, differences in views, which is bound to happen, whether it's on US, China, Middle East, whatever it is, even if our neighbors. But for the most part, we want to engage, we want to explain to Singaporeans what we are doing, and hopefully get a large majority of support in whatever decisions we take that will ultimately be to serve the interests of Singapore and Singaporeans. And if we can do that, then when we are on the international stage, we speak with one Singapore voice. We speak to advance our shared priorities and interests and to maintain our standing as a responsible and a respected member of the international community. So that's what we will continue to try and do to the best we can, because once we are unable to uphold this ability to speak with one voice, to keep politics at the water's edge, once we are unable to do that, then our ability to conduct effective foreign policy as a country is severely undermined. And we can see so many examples of that in so many other places.
Next question, please. Can we have it from Zhao Bao? Your hands up.
Hi, PM. Xiu Feng from Nehe Zhao Bao. Since you spoke about the topic of budget, we would like to check whether the EBRC has been convened.
And the what?
The EBRC has been convened.
How's that got to do with the budget?
It's coming. So if it hasn't, wouldn't it make this upcoming budget election budget? Thank you.
The EBRC has not been convened. When we do so, we will announce it, as we always do. We won't do these things quietly. Whether or not, when the election is to be held, I think I have not decided. And when, again, we start the process, people will know. The budget will be what it is, right? If potentially, it could be the last budget in our term of government, potentially. Because elections could still be done before the budget, but potentially, if the elections are after, then it will be the last budget in this term of government. But with any budget, whether it is at the beginning of the term or at the end of the term, we focus on our priorities in the near term, immediate issues of concerns that may arise, like cost of living, but we also think beyond the horizon on what are the investments and what are the decisions we need to take to put Singapore on a stronger position. It could be infrastructure, it could be tackling climate change, it could be our energy transition, it could be our economic strategies, things which I've highlighted just now. So these will be our priorities for the budget.
Next question, please, from Channel 8.
Hi, I'm Kian Kyung from Channel 8. PM, can I bring you back to the US-China relations? May I ask your opinion about how will the new US election result affect China? And could it also impact Singapore's trade and economy, considering that Singapore has a strong trade relationship with both US and China? Do you foresee any risks arising from their tensions?
Where our bilateral relations with the US is concerned, I think we will be able to continue to work well with the new administration. We've worked with Mr. Trump before when he was president. Under his watch, we extended our MOU on defense. We continue to grow our trade and investment links between Singapore and the U.S. in a very productive manner. So I think bilaterally, we look forward to working closely with the new team. Where China is concerned, I think it remains to be seen because we've heard what Mr. Trump hopes to do in his campaign, but what he actually does, I think we'll have to see, including what happens with the key members of his administration and the key members of his cabinet. But I would say, taking a step back, setting aside the issue of who is in power in the administration, the broad dynamics in the U.S.-China relationship is one where we are very concerned about. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, the U.S.-China relationship is in a challenging place, regardless of who is in power, right? Because on the U.S. side, while America remains a preeminent power in many dimensions, across many dimensions, they can see China coming up on the rise, and America has to decide what to do with this, to treat this as an existential threat and therefore to contain China or to embrace China and accept China as a major power in its own right. That's a decision that America has to decide on, and then it has to think about what steps to take to engage China, depending on that decision. On China's part, it too has decisions to make, because China today is not the China that existed when it first entered the WTO. So concessions that were given to China years back or decades back are probably not so relevant today, given where China's weight is in the global economy. And China, too, as a rising global power now, has to consider what responsibilities it undertakes to uphold the international order. So these are decisions that the two major powers will have to make, and these are consequential decisions, because the decisions that both sides take will determine the future global order. We hope leaders on both sides will make the wise choices to engage one another, to find a way to coexist with one another, where they can have a framework where they compete, but at the same time cooperate on issues of shared concerns. And where possible, Singapore will do our part to facilitate such a relationship.
Okay, thank you, PM. Let's have the next question from CNA TV.
Hi, PM. Earlier you mentioned the importance of having Singaporeans speak as one voice so that we can be credible members of the international community. And now we have someone overseas who is casting aspersion, making allegations against the country, its policies, the government, et cetera, in the form of Mr. Lee Hsien Yang. And of course, you know, with him gaining the political asylum from the UK, it seems to imply that the UK sort of agree with him, that whatever his allegations that were being made are true. So how has that sort of affected, has it put a dent to the relations that we have with the UK? If it has, what are we going to do about it? And of course, what else do you have to say about that?
Well, I can't speak for the UK government and its decisions on political asylum. That's for the UK to, these are decisions for the UK government to make. But I met Mr. Keir Starmer at Chogham. We had a good conversation. We didn't talk about this particular matter. We have a strategic partnership with the UK. We have many areas of cooperation to work on. And we think that there will be opportunities for us to strengthen the relationship further, especially as we mark 60 years of diplomatic ties next year. Where Mr. Lee Hsien Yang is concerned, he has made allegations which the government has responded fully to. I cannot control what he says or does, but there are no legal restrictions on him and his wife or his son. They are free to come back to Singapore. I cannot control what he says when he is abroad, but whatever his actions, they will not distract me and my team from focusing on the core issues that are important to Singaporeans, which means taking care of Singaporeans' livelihoods advancing our standards of living and making sure that we continue to build a better future for ourselves.
Thanks, PM. Can we have the next question from Tamil?
Good evening. I would like to ask you about the significance. What is the significance does the 60th anniversary of India-Singapore diplomatic relations hold for the future, and what milestones stand out? Thanks.
Our relations with India are progressing very well. We've talked about upgrading the partnership when Mr. Modi visited Singapore recently. We have identified new areas of cooperation which revolved around skills upgrading, doing more together on skills training, something which India needs, on semiconductors, on our participation in industrial parks in India, for example. So these are some of the examples that came up through the interactions between the ministers at the India-Singapore Ministerial Roundtable. And from what I understand, Mr. Jaishankar was just in town recently. I just met him and he gave me an update that the discussions since then, since the Prime Minister and I met, the discussions on all of these areas have been progressing very well. So I look forward, when I have the chance to visit India, possibly next year, to advance further these very concrete projects and to take our relationship to even greater heights.
Thank you. Next question, let's see. Business Times, please.
Hi, PM. Sharon from Business Times. Just now you mentioned about multilateralism weakening and with Trump's disdain for multilateralism, as we have seen during his first term, are you worried about the next 4 years?
Well, like I said just now, we'll have to wait and see what happens when the new team is in place, what specific actions they take. But from Singapore's point of view, we would certainly be an advocate for stronger multilateral institutions, be it the United Nations, IMF, World Bank, the WHO, the WTO. We think it's important to keep these institutions strong, to update them where necessary, because many of these were set up decades ago and they will need to be strengthened and updated in terms of their objectives and functions. And we play a constructive role wherever we can in moving in that direction. And I believe there will be like-minded countries who also share those perspectives, and we will work together towards these shared outcomes.
Okay, next question. Let's take it from CNA Digital.
Hi, PM. Fabian from CNA Digital. So you mentioned previously that foreign policy matters to all Singaporeans, right? So how can something like the US presidential elections actually be used as a learning lesson for Singaporeans? Is there any takeaway from the conduct and the outcome of the way the US elections were done that are relevant to the Singapore context? Thank you.
Well, elections in every country is different. It's not for me to comment on how other countries conduct their elections or what they do in their campaigns. We have our own elections, we have our own circumstances and context. I think whether it's the US or any country in the world, I would come back to the simple point that elections are important and elections are ultimately the people's opportunity to decide which party forms the government. And that's why I come back to the basic point I've made from the very beginning, that I do not take that for granted. I do not take the people's vote or mandate for granted. I do not assume that I will continue as Prime Minister or that the PAP will automatically form the next government. In the end, Singaporeans will have to decide. And when we get to elections, we will present to them our record, our track record, what we have done in this term of government. We hope that will be sufficient to earn the confidence and trust of Singaporeans, and we hope they will give us the chance to govern Singapore.
Next question, can we have Straits Times?
Coming back to the question of a Trump 2.0 presidency, while we wait for the key personnel to be appointed, one thing that Mr. Trump has been very consistent about is that of high tariffs. including a 10 to 20% tariffs on all foreign imports, as well as 60%, up to 60% or more for China imports. What would be the implications for our part of the world when it comes to this? And secondly, may I ask you to speak on IPEF? He said that IPEF, he has said that that would be dead on day one if he's elected. Again, what would be the implications for regional countries, including Singapore? Thanks.
Certainly, when there are tariffs applied in countries, not just America, even now Europe and other countries have been applying tariffs for fear of Chinese products overwhelming their market, particularly around electric cars. So we are concerned in a world where there are more and more frictions to trade, because trade is three times our GDP. We are an open economy. We are a trading economy. We would be concerned in a world where there are more and more frictions to trade overall. There may be a limited role for countries to apply tariffs, but it ought to be ideally applied within a proper framework. And that's why we go back to if there are issues, if there are disputes around trade, we think, from Singapore's point of view, a better way would be to revamp and strengthen the WTO. So while it's getting harder and harder to get countries to support this agenda, even set aside the new administration, even with the previous or the current U.S. administration under Mr. Biden, it's not been easy to put this on the agenda, but we will keep on trying, and we will work with like-minded countries to see how we can strengthen the WTO, have a better framework for continued trade and investments to take place amongst countries. Where it is difficult to do it at the global level, we can still do it at the regional level. And that's why we should also, and we are, doing whatever we can to do more around ASEAN and other regional forums. And increasingly, it's not just about trade in goods, which we already have largely barrier-free, but we are talking about non-tariff barriers, how we can reduce further. We're talking about services. We're talking also about data flows, because increasingly a lot of business is done, not just goods and services, but digital data flows. So we want to encourage more seamless flows in all of that, in all of these areas. And if we are unable to do that at the international level through the WTO, certainly we will do it bilaterally with like-minded countries, and we will do it at regional forums. But again, where it comes back to US and Singapore, we have an FTA with them. It's this year, the 20th anniversary of the FTA, it's a gold standard. And in fact, across both sides of the house in the US, bipartisan support for the FTA, they all recognize that it is a gold standard FTA, which has benefited Singapore, but certainly benefited America and created many good jobs for Americans. So on that front, we are hopeful that we can with the new administration, continue to work together. You had some other question around
the IPEF.
IPEF. Again, depends on what the... I mean, these are actions that the new administration may take, but we have been consistently advocating for stronger American presence in this part of the world. The American security umbrella remains relevant for Southeast Asia because that provides stability for the region. It provides a framework for countries in Southeast Asia to cooperate and to peacefully compete with one another. I think more and more Americans are asking, not just this administration, but generally over time, more and more Americans are asking, why does America have to bear the cost of these international responsibilities, of upholding the international system? And they feel that if we have to bear the cost of being the international policeman, but we are not seeing the benefits. And that's something that comes up in American politics constantly. And I'm sure that those voices will continue to grow. We understand that, and that's why we do not take this for granted. That's why we lean forward to support America's security presence in this part of the world. We are not an ally, but we are a major security cooperation partner. We lean forward to support America's deployment of its logistics, its rotational deployment of troops in this part of the world. But beyond security, we would like to see more American economic engagement in Southeast Asia. Up to now, America remains the largest source of foreign direct investments in Southeast Asia, even more than China. But American trade lags behind China. And I think there's still a lot more that US MNCs can do and would be happy to do in Southeast Asia in both trade and investments. We want to facilitate that because we think it's good for the region, it's good for Southeast Asia to be an open, inclusive region where we can engage not only China, which is, of course, nearest to us, and we have close links with economically, but also with America, which is a Pacific power, and it's important that they remain engaged in this part of the world.
Next question, please, from Shin Min.
Hi, PM. This is Kit Ling from Shin Min. So, PM, you mentioned about SG60 is one of the themes for the upcoming the budget consultation with the public. So, apart from what is already announced, what kind of ideas that is the government, you know, hoping to hear from the people? And are there, you know, already some other things that's not announced in the pipeline for SG60? And lastly, on behalf of those wet market people, is there an SG60 unbound? Yeah.
There are things that are not announced yet, of course. And we, as I mentioned, this is part of the budget process too. So we will be getting inputs, feedback, suggestions, and then we will consider as part of the budget what more we can do. But there are also, this is what more government can do, but we would also like SG60 to be something which Singaporeans can embrace. And certainly one of the one of my hopes is that as we enter into SG60, we can provide more platforms and opportunities for ground-up engagement and ground-up actions. So we will certainly look at facilitating local projects that individuals, community groups may wish to undertake, and we will empower them, facilitate that. We will provide resources so that these projects can proliferate. So that SG60 is not just a top-down exercise, but it's something that everyone can embrace and use this as an occasion for us to strengthen our sense of shared values, our sense of purpose, and also our sense of solidarity with one another. So we also hope that part of these initiatives would include ways in which we can show our concern for our fellow Singaporeans. So when we do things together, it's not just to celebrate, it's not just to commemorate, but it's also to show greater concern for our fellow citizens and more disadvantaged members of our society. So these are things we have in mind for SG60, but there will be, I think, certainly opportunities later on to flesh out more of these plans.
Next question, Berita at the back.
Hi, PM. I'm Izzuan. PM, we saw how Singaporeans watched the recent US elections very closely. And on social media, some of us got excited to cast our own ballots in our very own general election. So my question to you is, how ready are you and your team for a general election?
As each day passes, I am more ready. Because we are continuing to prepare. And as we get better and better, as we, you know, get to the point when we are ready, then I will call the general election.
Let's take the last few questions. Can we have one from Berita Harian, please?
Hi, PM. Anwar here from Berita Harian. Since you became PM about 6 months ago, besides travelling, you have also increased your tempo in doing your walkabout across GRCs and constituencies. What are some of the concerns which residents have shared with you? And how is the government planning to address them?
It's a range of concerns. the last time we had this press conference, someone asked a similar question, and I said that cost of living comes up a lot, which is why we know that this is a concern of Singaporeans. And cost of living has different elements and dimensions to it. It's not just what in the prices you pay for food and for groceries, but it includes housing, it includes COEs. And so, again, if you look at the different things we are doing on housing, we've been ramping up the supply. We've now introduced a new HDB framework, Plus and Prime. We've also increased our subsidies for first-timers. So we're doing various things to address concerns that Singaporeans have highlighted. But beyond cost of living, I think there are other issues that come up. Jobs, not so much unemployment, because our unemployment rates are low, but concern about job security. And I suppose it reflects a concern about our... People can sense that there is, we are in a different environment, a more turbulent global environment. People can sense that there are more changes around us, and with global changes, with geopolitical tensions, with technology, people are worried about not just today's job, but what about my jobs later on? And as I get older, and people, we are all living longer, will I still have a good job with a steady income when I'm in my 30s, my 40s, or if you're in your 40s now, then you worry about in your 50s and 60s. And these are real concerns. So we have taken some steps towards addressing them through Skills Future, and that's why I mentioned earlier one of the themes that we have in the budget that we are thinking about will be around training, skills, opportunities, and jobs for workers. So, in fact, the broad themes I highlighted just now for pre-budget consultations are very much derived from concerns that Singaporeans have highlighted, and we are therefore focusing on looking at what measures we can take, what new policies, programs, and schemes we might be able to put in place to address these concerns.
Next question. Can we have one from CNA?
Hi, PM.
Hi.
My question is mainly on election preparation. So, you know, with elections coming soon, so
it's
what is
PM's... By the end of next year.
Right.
No,
so,
it's not...
What are PM's...
I have all the time from now till the end of next year,
right,
to be
so,
clear.
Will PAP be, you know, coming up with, we'll be looking into new talents, basically, to come into the party, whom we could even see in the future election, and how would the election actually play into SG60 calendar?
Well, SG60 is a completely different matter. It's next year is SG60. I can't shift SG60. Next year is SG60, but elections... It's a separate considerations. We are preparing. We are getting ourselves ready. And as I said, we have till the end of next year to hold the elections. As far as candidates are concerned, it's continuing. In fact, my very first speech as Prime Minister in my inauguration, I've already said I'm looking for people. And that continues. And we have been very active in meeting people, identifying potential candidates. And when the time comes, I hope to be able to unveil a good slate of candidates for Singaporeans. You know that in every election, we renew quite a number of MPs. After they have served 3 terms or so, or 2 or 3 terms, we will ask them to step down for renewal, and they understand, and then we'll bring in new blood. And I hope to do the same during the elections.
Okay, thanks. Can we take the last question from Mothership, please?
Hello, Prime Minister Sulaiman from Mothership. Many young Singaporeans, including myself, we watch the US election, and I think it's fair to say it's one of the most contentious and febrile in recent memory. And we are concerned that the political situation in the US may lead to increased racial and social tensions spilling over here in Singapore. As we know, what happens in the US does impact and influence the rest of the world. My question is, what can we do, and what will you do to ensure that this doesn't happen in Singapore?
Thank you. Well, we are always concerned, not just from the recent American elections, but even if you look at elections everywhere in so many places, where it leads to an outcome where society becomes more divided, more polarized, and then there is no winner. Yes, the election may produce a winner, but in the end, everyone is worse off because it makes it harder to govern, and it makes it harder for countries to move forward. We've always been concerned about that, and that's why we try very hard to put in place safeguards in our society where it comes to falsehoods, for example. We recently updated our laws with regards to deepfakes and, you know, potential abuse, misinformation in the elections. We put in place these guardrails. That's one aspect of it. And then another way in which we protect ourselves is to continue strengthening our institutions. And then, in the end, explaining to Singaporeans what our considerations are. And we hope at the end of the day, it is Singaporeans themselves who will do their part. Because at the end of the day, Singaporeans hopefully will understand what's at stake. It's choosing the right party to govern. That's important. But it's also about determining our future. And we are taking these steps to chart our way forward as a tiny little country in a world, as I mentioned just now, that's becoming more dangerous, more turbulent, more volatile, more difficult for small countries like us. And if we are unable to hold together as a society, I think it will be very hard for us to stay relevant and very hard for us to survive and thrive. So at the end of the day, yes, elections will come and go. We will do our best. We will present our case as best as we can, and we certainly hope for Singaporean support. But at the end of the day, I think what's vital is we continue to do our best, all of us, government, people, political parties, all of us working together to make sure we never end up in a situation where society is divided, is polarized. We try our best to not to go down the path of political populism and opportunism, but find ways to keep our society strong, united, and maintain that high level of trust, because that's essential for Singapore to stay relevant and to survive in this new world.